Hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of Wisconsin is now in session. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Let's see, before we begin our arguments this morning, we have a couple of announcements, and the first is that Iola Scandinavia High School students may be with us this morning. If they are, would they and their advisor please stand? Oh my, what a wonderful group. You may be seated. Thank you very much for joining us. The students are here on a program that we run in coordination with the State Bar called Court with Class. So they know a little bit about what you're going to talk with us about today. Generally, a justice meets with the groups at noon, but I understand given the weather, you all have going to have to hit the road after you get done with the argument. But thank you very much for coming. Come back another time when you can stay a little bit longer. You will notice that the bench is not complete. Justice Ann Walsh Bradley will be joining us momentarily. I think her robe got left in the car when she brought her bag in, so she'll come out in just a couple minutes. Justice Rebecca Bradley is participating. She's watching us on Wisconsin Eyes, and give her a wave. She will participate in the case, but she will not join us at the bench today. So, with those arguments,
she's on the telephone.
She's on the telephone.
And she will watch. That's fine. I understand, Ann. Tina called her on the phone, and I know all that.
She can ask questions too.
Okay. All right. So what we are going to do is we're going to call the case now. Weinbow versus Capital Hustings, and the times are usual. So, Attorney Schreiner, I think you're up first.
Good morning, Your Honors. Chief Justice Rogensack, and may it please the Court. I'm here representing a couple of wine wholesalers who sold wine supplied by Weinbow for a period of years, one 11 years, one 6 years. And about 3 years ago this month, Weinbow terminated them without notice, without giving a reason, without giving them an opportunity to cure. And I guess that's all right unless you're a dealer under the Wisconsin dealership law, in which case it isn't all right at all. That's what led to this lawsuit. Weinbow, having been told that my clients considered themselves to be dealers under Chapter 135, initiated litigation in the Federal District Court in Milwaukee. It's a common thing out-of-state suppliers do. Frankly, they prefer to be in federal court. So we've gotten here by a circuitous route. Judge Randa ruled against us as a matter of law and held that 135.02 sub 3B, a new kind of dealership created by the legislature in 1999, did not apply to wine wholesalers. It only applies to hard liquor wholesalers. We appealed that to the United States Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit. We argued the case last spring in the Seventh Circuit, and the Seventh Circuit decided, contrary to Judge Randa's view, which was that this statute is clear and unambiguous, that the three of them couldn't figure out whether or not wine wholesalers are dealers within the meaning of the statute. And so, quite properly, and I say quite properly in two senses, they use their authority to ask this court to answer the question, does the definition of dealership contained in 135.02.3b include wine grantor-dealer relationships? I say quite properly for two reasons. One, noted by the Court of Appeals, it's an important issue of Wisconsin law. Chapter 135, which has been around for 40-some years now, is an important part of the way in which the legislature protects dealers from overreaching by suppliers who have a tendency to take advantage of the goodwill and strength built up for the mark by the dealer and to appropriate that to themselves without compensation if they can get away with it. The legislature has said, no, you can't get away with that.
Mr. Schreiner.
In Wisconsin. Yes, Your Honor.
Would it be appropriate to say that the dispositive issue in this case is whether the definition of intoxicating liquor in 135.0662A applies to the definition of dealership in 135.02(3)(b)?
I think that is a fair way of putting it because that's the way Winebow puts it. And, of course, there is nowhere else that Winebow can find a definition of intoxicating liquor to its liking other than in 135.066. So that gets me to what I think is the other important reason why this court has this case, because I think this case raises for the first time, obviously this court going back a good number of years, 80 years, has had occasion to look at the partial veto power of the governor before. Those had been original jurisdiction cases between essentially the governor and either the legislature or somebody who liked what the legislature did. And the question has always been, did the governor have the power to do what he did?
Well, counsel, is that an issue in this case?
I think it is.
You're challenging?
No. It is not an issue in this case whether the governor had the power to do what he did.
Okay.
We acknowledge that every veto that Governor Thompson made to this bill, the enrolled bill that was in front of him that eventually became, after his veto, Act 9, the appropriation bill that year, the executive budget bill, he had the power to do them. The question is, this case raises is an interpretive issue, which this court has never grappled with before. What is the effect of the governor's veto on a bill like this, where the governor, faced with two definitions of important terms, vetoed part of one and crafted another in a way that leads to different results?
Well, counsel, don't we just look at the law as it was finally enacted?
Sure we do.
Okay.
And that's what I want to suggest is where I would like to begin. Now, well, I have a client who's...
You say it leads to different results. Generally, we employ an approach of harmony. And we don't want different definitions within the same statute. Is it your position that we are left with different definitions in this same statute?
Absolutely, Justice Bradley. I believe that. And I believe, obviously, everybody look at 135.066 because, as the governor said, here it is. Here's what I've done. I've knocked wine dealers out of this statute. And, you know, the governor's got a big voice. He sends a veto message. He said, this is what I meant when I did it. But we know that he doesn't have any bigger voice than the legislature did. He acts in a legislative capacity when he vetoes. His authority is limited only to striking out words.
I just don't understand. You have to help me with this. You've talked about the governor's power.
Right.
You've talked about the governor's authority. And those are lofty issues. I see this in more mundane. Did the governor accomplish what he tried to do?
I absolutely agree with you. That is the issue this case presents. When I say there are two definitions, I go to 135.023B, which the governor couldn't veto unless he was willing to take hard liquor dealers out of the protection of the statute as well. And for whatever reason, he wasn't willing to do that. It would have been the simplest thing in the world to strike out 135.023B. It was new, but he wanted to keep it. He wanted to keep it for hard liquor dealers. He clearly didn't want to keep it for wine dealers. The problem with it is, when you look at the definition, in the section called Definitions, in this chapter, it says, dealership means any of the following, and we get down to the new one, B, under 3. A contract or agreement, whether express or implied, whether oral or written, between two or more persons, by which a wholesaler, as defined in section 125.02.21, is granted the right to sell or distribute intoxicating liquor or use a trade name and so forth. I'm now representing a client who's a wine dealer. I want to know whether I'm covered, whether he's covered by this statute. That's where I go. What's it tell me to do? It tells me that if I have a wholesaler, as defined in 125.02.21, I have a dealer. I go to 125.02.21, and what does it say? It says, wholesaler means a person, other than a brewer, brew pub, manufacturer, or rectifier, who sells alcohol beverages, that phrase, that strange phrase that we use, alcohol beverages, to a licensed retailer or to another person, and so forth. I then go to the definition in 125.02 of alcohol beverages, and what does it tell me? It tells me that alcohol beverages means fermented malt beverages and intoxicating liquor. So I go to the definition that's incorporated into the definition of alcohol beverages, that's incorporated into the definition of wholesaler of intoxicating liquor, and I find that the legislature has enacted that intoxicating liquor means all ardent, spirituous, distilled, or vinous liquors. Vinous liquors is wine. I won't go any farther. It goes more into the statute. So what the legislature has done in passing 135.02.3b, the statute that tells us who is a dealer, the question that the Seventh Circuit has asked this court to answer is, under 135.02.3b, is the definition of the dealership in there include wine grantor dealerships, and I come to the conclusion that it is.
Okay, hang on right there.
Right.
Because so far so good, right? I mean, I think that's a good exegesis of Chapter 125. But then that's not where wholesaler stops in 135.02 sub 3b. It goes on to say that a wholesaler who is granted the right to sell or distribute intoxicating liquor, right? So this is a subset of wholesalers that are defined by Section 125.02 sub 21, right? It's not all wholesalers.
It's not all the wholesalers defined in 125, because right. That includes beer sellers.
Exactly. So this is a subset. So right. It's wholesalers who sell intoxicating liquor.
Right.
All right. So now, so that gets back to my question at the beginning. We've got to figure out what to do with the definition of intoxicating liquor in 066 and determine whether that applies to the term intoxicating liquor here in 135.02 sub 3 sub b. Right?
Well, certainly if I were representing the client, my fictional and actual client, I would stumble on 135.066 later in the chapter.
You would.
And I would find in there legislative findings and a definition that intoxicating liquor, this odd definition, has the meaning given in 125.028 minus wine.
Mm-hmm.
But my question then would be, why do I read that definition into the embedded definition of a wholesaler, a seller of intoxicating liquor in 135.023b?
All right, so let's camp on that for just a second. Is this, would you say that the confluence of 135.066 and 135.02 create for an ambiguity?
We know there's an ambiguity because we've got two different definitions, okay, in my view, in the statute.
So we need to go to legislative history as a potential place to go, right?
Well, okay.
All right. So part of the legislative history is that there was the bill as passed by the legislature, and then it was partially vetoed by the governor that creates this ambiguity. One of the things that he struck out in 135.066 was in sub 2 in the definition section, originally said the definitions apply to this section, and he struck out to this section. What significance should we attribute to the elimination of that phrase?
Well, my friend would have you attribute controlling significance to it. I don't think it's that easy, because I don't think when you look at this statute, you can ignore the fact that the definition adopted by the legislature sends you to 125.021 for the definition of who the wholesaler is. So what kind of a wholesaler? In my view, the legislature said in that section that it includes wine wholesalers. But we get to 135.066, where the governor has, right in the middle of things, without saying in this chapter, without saying in this section, which the legislature had included, but which he struck out, says intoxicating liquor has a meaning given in 125.028. We know what the governor was trying to do. That can't be dispositive. That's why I say this is an issue for this court to resolve. The governor doesn't get to say what the law means. By the time he's acted and he sent it back to the legislature and the legislature hasn't overridden the veto, which legislatures don't do in this state for 37 years.
Mr. Schreiner, you said in your view the definition in 125 includes wine. Can you refresh my recollection and tell me what the definition, what are you specifically referring to in 125?
125.02 sub 21, which you're sent to,
yes,
tells you who a wholesaler is. A wholesaler sells alcohol beverages. Alcohol beverages is defined to include fermented beverages and intoxicating liquor.
Yes.
And intoxicating liquor is defined to include wine.
Let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah, that's in 125.02.
Intoxicating liquor includes wine.
Right.
Okay.
In sub 8.
Of 125.02.
Yes. 125.02, right. So I think really the question is, can the governor, because he wants to do it, essentially create an ambiguity and hope that it will be interpreted in a way with the heavy influence of his veto message saying, this is what I meant, this is what I meant, that induces a court to ignore what the legislature said in 135.02 sub 3B, which is the definition section for who's a dealer.
And in that definition section, as it was originally created by the legislature, after the term intoxicating liquor, there was originally a cross-reference to Chapter 125 in the definition.
There was.
And that was part of what was vetoed as well. What significance does that have?
Yes, it was. And it was vetoed, but it reads perfectly clearly without paying any attention to what was taken out.
Okay.
And so
would we look
at the statute the way it ended up.
Yeah.
It seems to me you end up where I am. You don't look back and say that he took out a cross-reference to intoxicating liquor in 120 in sub 3B any more than you look back to see that he struck out the in this section language in 135.066.
Justice Kelly is asking a line of questions that is of interest to me because I am looking at the section of the certification order from the Seventh Circuit that you are very well familiar with. Distributors also must show that intoxicating liquor, as that phrase is used in the per se definition, includes wine. This is a challenging task because the governor eliminated the cross-reference that had defined that term. Thus, that's what Justice Kelly pointed out, there is no express statutory language on their side. Wisconsin courts generally apply the common, ordinary, and accepted meaning of the undefined terms. Now, my recollection, I haven't looked at this since last week, but my recollection, because it's kind of a memorable thing, is you included somewhere in here some publicly circulated media accounts to try to illustrate your point that wine is considered a liquor. Can you refresh my memory on what you included in the court record to help you prove that point?
We included in our argument in the Seventh Circuit, but have not continued it here, an argument that the plain meaning of liquor includes wine.
Okay, so that's not here.
I don't rely on that because I concede the ambiguity.
Okay.
It seems to me that when three judges of the Seventh Circuit say they can't figure out what it means, that's by definition what an ambiguous statute is.
Okay.
And therefore, it needs to be disambiguated by this court. I think that is the classic definition of an ambiguous statute. When reasonably well intelligent people look at it and can't tell whether it means one thing or the other.
Stood to memory, I didn't even know the Amish had a newspaper, much less that you would find a copy of it. So that was educational.
Your Honor, the point really is, I think, and our argument is, that the legislature has defined in 135, which is the statute we're interpreting, in 135.02.3b, who is entitled to the protection of this chapter of the statutes.
As defined. Mr. Schreiner?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Schreiner, can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. How do we then, if we accept your argument, how do we give meaning to the definition of intoxicating liquor in 135.066 sub 2? I'm understanding your argument. You're asking us to give that application only within that section of the statute.
I do, and I use it in 135.066 sub 1, where there are a series of legislative findings which, because of the governor's veto, will only apply to hard liquor dealerships. And in those findings, the legislature has attempted to put a thumb on the scale for the benefit of hard liquor dealers, as it ends up, by talking about its desire to promote a balanced and healthy three-tier system, talking about all of the benefits to Wisconsin of having such a system, and effectively giving a roadmap through the need, once you're a dealer, to establish whether or not the supplier, the grantor, has cause, which is a later issue that isn't in this case, whether the dealer has cause. The dealer here didn't articulate cause, but as the court knows from many cases under 135.02 sub 3A, the original definition, the question, once you figure out if someone is a dealer, which is something wine and hard liquor wholesalers had a hard time doing in the case law, which is why the legislature gave them a helping hand. Once you figure that out, you still have to determine the question of whether or not there's cause. And 135.066 says in one, these are important issues, essentially because the legislature has made findings about them, which are in favor of it. And also because one of the issues that was in this case, and again in the statute, which again went away when the governor vetoed the effective date, is that the legislature tried to give the change retroactive effect, and the governor vetoed that out. So there are findings in there having to do with the fact that anybody who's acting since the 21st Amendment, which gave such broad authority to the states to regulate the sale of any kind of alcohol, must know that the legislature changes the law frequently.
Counsel, did the legislature give a more particularized meaning to intoxicating liquor in 135.0661B?
135.066.1.
I'm sorry, it's 2A.
2A?
Not 1B, 2A.
I think it gave it the meaning, because I read this without knowledge of what the governor was up to. I think we read this to apply to 135.066, which by coincidence just happens to be what the legislature intended when it passed it. So
okay,
in other words,
135.066 is entitled Intoxicating Liquor Dealerships.
That's right.
Correct? And there is a definition then in that section in sub 2 about what intoxicating liquor means in this section. And it refers back again to 125.02 sub 8, which you've talked about,
right,
minus wine.
It uses the definition in 125.08 and takes out the word wine.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
And that's the meaning that intoxicating liquor has, in my view, in 135.066. Now, the legislature didn't intend this odd mixture where you've got protection of dealerships in 02 sub 3B and intoxicating liquor dealership findings in 066. It intended 066 to have a broader purpose. It intended 066 to prevent grantors from terminating because of a change in ownership of the dealer or because of a change in the method of doing business
that
of the grantor.
That was truly the legislature's intent, and that the minus wine, if I get your meaning, doesn't really mean anything.
It
in
means
regard to dealerships definitions.
Doesn't
you're
mean
saying
anything
that doesn't define a dealership.
It doesn't.
Okay. Why didn't they then override the governor's veto, which they certainly could have done?
Your Honor, I think that's a question I'm glad you asked because I ought to answer it, and that is that I don't think the test can be whether the governor's veto was overridden. You know, it's hard enough to get a majority to pass a bill in the legislature. To get two-thirds is pretty tough. And I think that the question of how this is to be interpreted, and that's why I think it's the court's role to tell us what this means, of what the effect of what the governor did was. We know what the governor wanted to do. The question is whether he accomplished it. And I don't think you can put a thumb
what
on
is the... No, the question is, what did the legislature do?
It is.
We're interpreting a statute. We're
right.
not interpreting the governor. We're interpreting the statute. And we are left with a definition that says intoxicating liquor has the meaning in Section 125.02, sub 8, but minus wine. And the legislature let that stand. They could have struck out the minus wine.
The legislature didn't act on it further.
Right.
When it came out of the governor's pen back to the legislature, and it didn't override it, I don't think you can put talismanic significance on the fact that the governor didn't override it. I think we need to ask ourselves what it meant.
Well, I think we have to ask ourselves, what did the legislature
right.
enact? Because that is
right.
what we do.
And that's why I take you back to 135.023B. Sorry.
I'm sorry, you finished?
I am, yes. Okay. Thank you, Ann.
The certification, someplace in the
right.
certification, the Seventh Circuit notes, but aha, governor's veto under your law, Wisconsin, is part of the legislative history inquiry. In other words, as I read it,
right.
that the we have case law, as I recall reading it, that says that the governor's veto becomes legislative history.
Right. But it's not what the governor said he intended to do by it. It's what the governor did with it.
In some ways, I say, in looking at this, just, okay, maybe the text is ambiguous. We've got two definitions. Governor may have meant something. That's part of legislative history. The legislature, when it enacted it, that's part of certainly the legislative history. I say respectfully, throw up my hands, who knows? Let's look at what the statute says, and let's apply our tools that we use to interpret ambiguities in statutes.
I ask you to do that, and one of those tools is to pick up on the legislature's explicit cross-reference to 125.02 sub 21. I'd like to reserve some time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
You
still have 5 minutes when your yellow light is on, Mr. Schreiner. But that's fine. If you're done, we can pick up with the respondents, please.
Good morning. May it please the court. Chief Justice Rogensack, my name is Dan Jansen, and I appear before you this morning on behalf of the appellee, Winebow, Inc. Now, this court has repeatedly held that statutory interpretation involves the ascertainment of meaning. It is not a search for ambiguity. Now, here, the court may ascertain the meaning of the phrase intoxicating liquor as it's used in Chapter 135, the Fair Dealership Law, by reading its one and only one unambiguous definition that appears in 135.066. Now, not surprisingly, the single definition of intoxicating liquor falls under the section entitled Intoxicating Liquor Dealerships. What better place to find a definition of intoxicating liquor than in the section entitled Intoxicating Liquor Dealerships? And that single Chapter 135 definition excludes wine, period. And I would suggest to you that any argument to the contrary is simply the attempt to create ambiguity in the chapter as opposed to ascertaining meaning.
Well, counsel, I'm not sure that's entirely true. When we look at the definition of dealership in 135.02 sub 3 sub B, refers to wholesaler as defined in Chapter 125. And Mr. Schreiner led us through the various subsections of the definition section there that demonstrate that a wholesaler within the meaning of 135.02.3B does include someone who sells wine. Was there any part of his analysis that was incorrect?
I would say that's incorrect.
What part?
If we start with the text of 135.02, it includes a key word and a key phrase. The word is defined in the text of 02. The phrase is not. The word is wholesaler. And we know what wholesaler is because the text states that a wholesaler is defined by reference to 125.02 sub 21. But the phrase intoxicating liquor, is not defined in 02.
All right, so let's stop right there. So do you agree with Mr. Schreiner that a wholesaler, as defined in Chapter 125, includes someone who sells wine?
As defined in Chapter 125, I do.
Okay, so now that's the definition that we've got in 135.02 sub 3 sub B. So now tell me about the phrase and how that impacts the definition of wholesaler.
Well, the phrase, Your Honor, never finds its way into 02 because there is no reference in 02 to 125.02 sub 8. To reach that conclusion, the court would have to accept what I call by analogy the Russian nesting doll theory of statutory interpretation. Perhaps that the court is familiar with these. You open up a wooden doll and inside find a smaller doll and inside find yet a smaller doll. What the court would have to do to accept the distributor's argument is to decide that it's acceptable to take the express reference in 02 to 125.02 sub 21 and open up that doll.
Well, why would that not be appropriate? We have to figure out what wholesaler means, right?
Well, the statute gives a definition of wholesaler, and it says that a wholesaler is someone in 125.02 sub 21, but there is no definition of intoxicating liquor. If you're going to pull that phrase in from 125, you need to open up all the dolls, and you need to start with 125.02 sub 21 and open it up. And you need to then find the definition of alcohol beverages and jump up to 125.02 sub 1 and open up that doll, and then jump down to 125.02 sub 8 and open up that doll, and finally find the definition of wine. And frankly, there is simply no authority cited by the distributors ever in the history of this three-year litigation to suggest that is an acceptable tenet of statutory interpretation.
Counsel, let me just suggest to you that might be just an obvious way that we construe statutes. Let's put aside the WFDL for a second, and let's say we're entirely inside of Chapter 125. We're trying to figure out what is a wholesaler that is subject to Chapter 125. Don't we have to go through that nesting analysis to figure out which wholesalers are subject to that chapter?
You would, but you would have all the subsections expressly laid out in the text of 125, something that you don't have in 135.
Okay, so I just want to make sure how to figure out where to stop in your argument. So if a wholesaler for 135.02 purposes is defined as in Chapter 125, don't we have to take the full definition? How it's defined in Chapter 125? How do we know where to stop? How can we just look at 125 sub 21?
Well, you know where to stop because 135 has but one reference to a single subsection, and you have put your finger directly on the problem. If you accept the distributor's theory, where do you stop?
Except at the end of the definition. That's where you would stop, right?
Well, if there were some authority to suggest that you could incorporate 021, then jump up to 08, and then back to 01, then that might be a reasonable approach, but there's no authority to suggest that's true, and frankly, there would be no reason to stop there. Why, for example, could you not then incorporate 125.03 into Chapter 135, which gives the Department of Revenue rulemaking authority, and suggest that the Department of Revenue might have the ability to determine who's a dealer and what's good cause under the fair dealership law.
Because, counsel, I don't think that 125.03 defines wholesaler.
It doesn't. But if you start, if this court determines that it's acceptable to start including other unreferenced subsections, then there's no reasonable place to end. And frankly, Judge, this is an argument that's already been rejected three times. Judge Randa rejected this argument at the district court level. as did Judge Jones, and frankly, so did the Seventh Circuit. As Justice Gableman stated earlier, the Seventh Circuit said there is no express statutory language on their side.
Okay, so let me just, let's camp out then on 21, right? That's where you want to stop, is 21. So a wholesaler is someone who sells alcohol beverages, right?
Alcohol beverages, correct.
So is wine an alcohol beverage?
Wine is not an alcohol. Well, if you go to 01, 01 says an alcohol beverage means intoxicating liquor in Chapter 125.
Okay, why do you go there?
Well, because you asked the question about subsection 21 and its definition of intoxicating liquor.
I know, but aren't you now opening up the Katushka dolls?
No, because what I have suggested to the court is that it limit its referrals to Chapter 25 when the text of the statute specifically makes that reference. And 02 makes that reference only to 125.02.21, and it is only 135.066 that includes an express statutory reference to 125.02
I know. Sub-8. So the reference to 125.02 sub 21 is someone who sells alcohol beverages, right? So that's what
right.
We know. That's how we know what a wholesaler is. It's someone who sells alcohol beverages, right?
Correct.
Okay. So given that, and that's where you want to stop with the definition in 125, and we come back over to 135.02, so now we have a definition that a wholesaler is someone who sells alcohol beverages. So don't we need to figure out whether wine is included in alcohol beverages?
Certainly, and the perfect place to look is 135.066 sub 2.
That doesn't define alcohol beverages.
Well, it defines intoxicating liquor, and it says that intoxicating liquor is given the definition in 125.02 sub 8.
Why do we go there?
Because that's the reference that's in the text of 135.066 sub 2.
But now we are opening up the Katushka dolls, aren't we?
Pardon?
We're opening up the Katushka dolls. The nesting.
I don't believe that there's any nesting here. There are two references. You have a reference in 02 to wholesaler, and you have a reference in 066 to intoxicating liquor. And when you read those two together, you have a perfectly unambiguous and workable definition of who is a dealer under 135.02.
So when we're defining wholesaler, we can just disregard what alcohol beverages means.
Well, we need to start with 135, and 135 gives a more particular definition of what intoxicating liquor means. While 125.02 sub 21 has the reference.
Counsel, hang on. No. When we're defining wholesaler, wholesaler is defined as someone who sells alcohol beverages. Do we just disregard what alcohol beverages means?
We do.
Okay.
Because we have an express definition in 066. And frankly, I think the Wisconsin legislature knew this as well. The Wisconsin legislature knew that it wasn't enough in 02 to simply include the reference to 125.02 sub 21. The Wisconsin legislature knew that it also needed to include the reference to 125.02 sub 8 to bring that definition of wine into 02, and that's the reference that the governor took out. So now when you read the plain text of 135, you are left with a single reference to 125.02 sub 8. It appears in 066 in the definition section of the section entitled Intoxicating Liquor Dealerships.
Counsel, when I look at this statute, I wonder if what it says and what it means is that when it comes to people of the state wanting to buy wine, they are not required to purchase that through a three-tier system.
I don't read that in the statute, Your Honor.
Really?
Because there is a three-tier system, and a consumer who goes to buy wine or any...
So if I go to California and I want to buy a case of wine, I have to send that home? It has to go through a three-tier system? That's what you're saying? Because when you go somewhere like that, another state, they ask, what state are you from? And then they say, oh, okay, we can ship there.
Oh, no, we can't ship there, right?
Right. In Wisconsin, the spirits would go from the supplier through the distributor and then to the restaurant or the grocery store or any other outlet.
No, if you want to buy a case of wine from Pickle Winery in California, do you think you can ship that to Wisconsin?
You may be able to buy wine directly from California, but if you're going to buy wine on premises in Wisconsin, if you're going to step into a store or you're going to step into a restaurant, then that store or restaurant has to be licensed and will have purchased its product from a distributor who got it from the supplier.
Okay, so now you've confused me a little bit. You're saying sometimes the statute applies to wine and sometimes it doesn't?
Well, you were asking about consumers, and I am focusing on the distributor.
Right.
For distributors, according to the fair dealership law, there are two ways to gain its protection. One is under the traditional community of interest route, and the other is the per se route for distributors of intoxicating liquor. And the statute says that someone who sells intoxicating liquor does not include wine. That's the definition in 135.066. And I would note that the distributors have provided no authority to suggest that the same phrase should be accorded two different meanings in the same chapter, and not only two different meanings, two opposite meanings in the same chapter, particularly when the phrase is expressly defined. And if you accept the notion that the phrase intoxicating liquor minus wine should be limited to 135.066, it virtually destroys any meaning that's given to that phrase. And you've seen the creativity that the distributors...
If I can just stop you just a minute. I want to be sure that I understand your answer to Justice Ziegler, who was concerned with whether we are maintaining, with your argument, a three-tiered system of purchase. And if I understood you, you would go from the manufacturer to the distributor, who would then sell it to the retailer from which I could buy it, correct? But the person in the middle between the manufacturer and the retailer is not a dealer under the fair dealership law. They may distribute the alcohol to retailers, but that doesn't, by the virtue of what they're doing, make them a dealer. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. Certainly not a per se dealer. They may be able to prove a community of interest under their traditional test, but it does not make them a per se dealer. And here is the problem. If you accept the distributor's argument, then wine is included within 02, but it's not included within 066. And keep in mind that 135.066 sub 5 has two exceptions for small dealers and for small grantors. Now, if you limit the definition of wine to 02 and you decide that the definition is intoxicating liquor minus wine, that is only hard liquor in 066, you raise the possibility that someone that buys and resells but a single bottle of wine, buys, takes title to, and resells, is a per se dealer now under the Wisconsin Fair Dealership Law with all of its significant protections, including good cause, notice, and an opportunity to cure. What the distributors have told you is that the governor wanted one thing and that the legislature wanted another. They've told you that the governor wanted wine out of the statute altogether. And they've told you that the legislature wanted wine in, but also including the small dealer exception. Now, if 02 has a definition of intoxicating liquor that includes wine, and 066 has a definition of intoxicating liquor that is only hard liquor, the exceptions in 135.066 sub 5 for small dealers and small grantors apply only to hard liquor. There is no longer a small dealer exception, for example, for wine, which would be completely inconsistent with the past 40 years of this court's jurisprudence on community of interest and requiring interdependence and shared goals and a partnership.
All right,
and there
counsel,
really is no way to reconcile now 02 and 066.
Well, counsel, I'm going to ask a question on it. Mr. Schreiner took me up short when I asked the first question about the definitions. And I invite him to listen carefully to the question I'm going to pose to you, and if he feels like addressing it on rebuttal, he can. Why isn't this a matter as simple as looking at the definition? And one, he told me, I wrote it down, that in his view, which automatically got my attention, in his view, the reference to 125.02 includes wine. And that's what he's, that's the foundation, it seems to me, that he's relying on. And he specifically, when I questioned that, he specifically referred me to subsection 8. And I now look at 135.066, and I am reminded that we get the definition, and this is what the Seventh Circuit was referring to in its certification memorandum. Intoxicating liquor has the meaning given in section 125.028, so correct so far, I'm with him there, minus wine. So I turn to 125.028, and sure enough, I see vinous liquors, arguably wine. But we don't have to look there because we're already instructed that for purposes of 135, it's minus wine. Tell me, in your view, why it's not a matter as simple as that.
It is. The Fair Dealership Law is about a three-page statute. It's a matter of opening up the book, reading the statute, seeing that the statute has a unambiguous definition of intoxicating liquor, and applying that unambiguous definition to the phrase each time it appears.
And am I correct or incorrect that other than the subsection 2 in 135.066, specifically 135.066.2 small a, there is no connection between 135 and 125?
In chapter 135, there are but two references to 125. There is the reference to wholesaler in 135.02.
Right, having to do with wine.
And the reference in 135.066 with its reference to 125.02.
You really should, for future argument, just include the tail end of, include the subsections. Don't assume that we all, right? When you say 066, you're talking about 2A, right?
Yes, Judge, I'm talking about 135.066 sub 2 sub A.
Yeah. Okay.
But to answer your question, yes, I believe it is as simple and as straightforward as you have suggested. Really, the way this case ought to be decided is to open up Chapter 135, to look at the definition of the phrase, to appreciate that the phrase is unambiguous, and to give that phrase its specifically defined meaning each time that phrase appears. Now, another problem that's encountered, if this Court were to decide that 066, that the 135.066.2a definition is limited to section 135.066, is that it basically takes all meaning from that definition in 135.066 to limit it to that section. And the Court will recall the trouble that the distributors had to go to give some meaning to the phrase when limited to 135.066. One had to assume, first, that there was a grantor that was going to consolidate or terminate someone in its distribution network, and then assume that a distributor would bring some sort of lawsuit, and assume that that lawsuit included a challenge for good cause.
Well, you say limited. What if it's limited to 135.066? What other operative definition in the chapter of wine is there?
That's it.
Okay.
There is none. But what the distributors have told you is that you can still make some use of the phrase if one assumes that it's limited to 135.066.
Intoxicating liquor.
That's correct. And I would suggest that there is not, because the distributors needed to make seven or eight assumptions to concoct a scenario where a grantor was consolidating its distribution network and a challenge was made under Ziegler, and then perhaps under the balancing in Ziegler, that hard liquor distributors should get some additional weight or some thumb on the scale because of the legislative findings that wine would not. when to give meaning to 135.0662A, the much more obvious, straightforward, and natural way to do that would be to simply apply the unambiguous definition of the phrase to the phrase each time it's used.
So, counsel, what is the point of 135.066?
To define intoxicating liquor.
That's the only reason it exists.
Well, it exists to define intoxicating liquor in 135.0662A, and then there are the small dealer and small grantor exceptions to a dealership in 135.066 sub 5.
Right. So 135.066 is not a definition statute. It exists for the purpose of what it says it exists for, right? It's not just to define things. It has substantive provisions in there, right?
It does. It has
findings of fact, right?
Pardon?
It has legislative findings.
It does.
Right. And then it has a provision that limits the applicability of the FDL to intoxicating liquor, right?
It does.
Right. So why should we not read the definition in that section to be in service of those purposes?
Well, there are a number of problems with that. To begin with, it would leave the undefined term intoxicating liquor in 135.02 when you'd have a perfectly fine and serviceable definition in 135.06 sub 2 sub A.
It might be perfectly fine and acceptable, but what we're trying to figure out is whether it can escape the confines of 066, right? So give me your best argument for why it would be an unacceptable reading of 066 to say that the definition of intoxicating liquor is in service of the substantive provisions of that statute.
Well, because it essentially is no meaning at all. The only way to give it some meaning in light of the legislative findings is the way the distributors suggest, which requires a lot of hypothetical conjecture. It really gives very little purpose to that phrase if the phrase is limited to 066.
Okay. And then the exceptions?
And the exceptions, which, frankly, again, if one limits the definition in 02 to include wine and excludes wine in 066, it makes it extremely difficult to reconcile these two sections. And again, someone who buys and resells and takes title to even a single bottle of wine now is arguably a per se dealer, which is a result that no one wanted.
Okay. But you just did reconcile it right there, right? It might not be an especially wise provision, right? But you reconciled it. Why can't we do that?
It would be reconciling it in a way that would be, again, inconsistent with the last 40 years of jurisprudence with this court, with community of interest. It would also require this court approving transporting an unreferenced subsection into 02 and having a single chapter.
Okay, slow down just a second. I want to stick with 066 for a second. So you make reference to a change in 40 years of jurisprudence, this court, but that's kind of what the legislature does, right? They change jurisprudence.
The legislature enacts laws that are signed by the governor, and it's this court's job to read the text and apply the text. And
right.
If you look at the text, this three-page chapter has a single definition of intoxicating liquor.
Right. And if the effect of that is that it goes against 40 years of our jurisprudence, then it isn't our duty to salute and apply?
Well, this court has held that statutes should be interpreted in a non-absurd manner. And I think an argument could be made that it is an absurd interpretation to suggest that anyone who buys, takes title to, and resells a single bottle of wine is a per se dealer under the Fair Dealership Law, entitled to 90 days notice to terminate that right to buy one bottle of wine and 60 days to cure, and the presumption of irreparable injury and compensatory damages. And that's where we're left. If there are two different definitions, one in 135.02 and one in 135.066, you buy a single bottle of wine, you are a per se dealer, which is not at all a reasonable interpretation. And importantly, in 135.0662A, there is no limitation anymore that suggests that it is limited to this section. We have been unable to find any authority that suggests that a definition in a section must be limited to that section unless it contains the phrase in this chapter.
Yeah. And Council, one other thing on the absurd interpretation. I just want to make sure I understand how far you take that. As I look at the definition of wholesaler in 125, that is a person who sells alcohol beverages to a licensed retailer or to another person who holds a permit to sell alcohol beverages at wholesale, right? So that's a limitation. It's not somebody that, you know, just happens to buy a bottle of wine from a winery and then sells it to somebody else.
A licensed middleman, correct.
Right. So it has to be... It has to be for resale to someone who's licensed.
It does. Okay. But if you are that middleman and you buy and resell a single bottle of wine and you don't pay for it, ordinarily a grantor might decide, well, this person didn't pay for a single bottle of wine. I'm no longer going to sell to them. Now the person who buys a single bottle of wine is a per se dealer. And if the person who sold the bottle of wine wants to stop selling because they didn't get paid, now they need to give 90 days notice, and they need to give an opportunity for 10 days to cure. And if they don't follow those notice provisions correctly, then the licensed middleman who bought and resold but a single bottle of wine can bring claims, including compensatory damages, can seek a temporary injunction with the presumption of irreparable harm.
Yeah, and so that's the part you're saying is absurd.
It is, and that can be avoided by giving the phrase, as it appears in the statute, it's one unambiguous definition. And I would note that there has been no case to consider this issue before, but in our brief you'll see that we have cited two treatises, including one, the Wisconsin Fair Dealership Law Treatise, that's been cited by this court before, including in one of the Ziegler cases and in Baldwin. And the treatises have suggested that there is no confusion here, and that the distributor's arguments have problems, including a fatal problem. And notably, and this question was raised earlier during Mr. Schreiner's presentation, the legislature could have simply overridden the governor's veto, or at any time in the last 19 years, in a non-appropriations bill, the legislature could have simply inserted its definition back into 02.
Hey, Council, just out of curiosity, are there other, in general application of the fair dealership law, is there an exemption for de minimis sellers?
Under the typical community of interest standard, no, there's not. There's the Ziegler test, which is a 10-factor test that focuses on advertising, employees, percentage of sales, investments. The way the legislature passed this statute, when wine was included, there was also in 135.066 sub 5, there was a small dealer exception for wine. But those were taken out as well. You had to be above 5%. And the way the distributors interpret that statute now, the de minimis exception, the 5%, is only applicable to resellers of hard liquor. There's no way now to make it applicable to resellers of wine.
Right. So there used to be an exception that would be applicable to wine dealers, but that got taken out by the governor.
That's correct.
Okay.
And I see that my time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Treatise writers don't get to tell us what the law means. They try. They sell their books. You can buy them if you want to, but you got to look at what they say.
So, Mr. Schreiner, Mr. Jansen says that it would be absurd to read 066 as being limited to that definition of alcohol, of intoxicating liquor, in part because that would eliminate an exemption for small sellers of wine.
I think you put your finger on it with a question that you asked him, which I was going to point out, which is the definition of wholesaler, which is key to a dealer. The wholesaler means a person who sells alcohol beverages to a licensed retailer or to another person who holds a permit to sell alcohol beverages at wholesale. Now, the notion that you're going to get a lawsuit because someone has sold a single bottle of wine to a retailer is absurd. And you say, is there a de minimis exception? A de minimis exception is in the law. The law doesn't care about trifles. And that's what de minimis comes from.
Mr. Schreiner, I'm not understanding why your case doesn't boil down to us defining wine as being included in intoxicating liquor.
It does, Your Honor. The question is, where do you get that definition from? And I say the definition comes from the perfectly straightforward. I don't have a case on this. The statute says...
Which statute?
135.02, sub 3, sub B,
yes.
That a dealership is a contract between two or more persons by which a wholesaler, as defined in 125.02.21.
Well, then I guess I ask the reverse of Justice Kelly's question. If that has to do with dealerships and wholesalers, why do we use that definition for wine as opposed to the one in 135.066?
Because it does what the legislature commonly does. It sends us to a definition which includes other definitions, what my friend wants to call nesting dolls. That's normally how the legislature...
What you just said could equally apply to 135.066.
135.066, however, Your Honor, does not say that it applies anywhere else in the statute. It fits perfectly well as a definition of 135.066 on intoxicating liquor dealerships. Let me repeat the point. This is not crazy when you say there's some sense in which this definition that the governor left us with of intoxicating liquor has meaning if it's left to 135.066. Once we know who a dealer is, whether it's a wine wholesaler or a hard liquor wholesaler, he's left this now only to hard liquor wholesalers because he's cut wine wholesalers out of this. Once we know that, we have to decide whether or not the supplier has good cause to terminate. That's a later issue. That's what these legislative findings are all about. They're important legislative findings. They say we're doing this because essentially wholesalers are being terminated for bad reason and they're destroying our three-tier system and we want to sustain it.
Counsel, those reasons are very good if you're included within the definition of a wholesaler of an intoxicating liquor.
Right.
But if you're accepted from that definition, as 2A appears to do, I don't think all of those things mount to a hill of beans, because that's not who we're talking about. Am I wrong?
The question here is whether there's anything left of 135.066 if we limit the definition that the governor created only to 066. And my answer to that question is yes, it's a complete and workable law.
Right, but it doesn't apply. We're worried about whether it applies to wine distributors. We're not worried about whether it's a workable law for someone that sells gin or brandy. That's not what we're worried about, but they are included, correct?
Your Honor, if the court thinks that the fact that the governor put this definition in here, which is all he could do, because all he could do was cross out, he couldn't put in a phrase, which I'm sure he would have liked to have said, in this chapter, that would have solved the problem. We lose. He took out in this section, and then he put this definition together, and then he announced, look what I've done. But it isn't for the governor to say any more than it's for treatise writers who rely on the governor's intent for their statement to say, it's for this court to say what the law means when it comes out of the process. And I tell you, and I mean it, that dealership is defined in 135.02.3b is an act of the legislature that should be given effect because the governor was not able to get within 135.02.3b and chop wine out of there. Because of the way that the legislature wrote the bill. He had to do what he could do, and he said, here, I'll just make a new definition.
Okay. Well,
thank you very much.
Thank you both for very interesting arguments. It's a new focus on statutory interpretation as we attempt to say what the statute means to assist the Seventh Circuit as they finally put their pronouncement on this case one way or the other. We're going to take a brief break now so that the students may leave and another group of students can come in, and so other lawyers can take your place. But thank you very much for the briefs. Were very good, as were the arguments. Thank you.